have to give Ari Aster an A+ for his commitment to showcasing white people's lack of talent in the musical arena through bad flute music.
Okay, confession.
You're a bad flute player!
No, I dig the shit out of Eastern European folk music, and, like, not gonna lie, my top song from this past year was a sad-as-fuck Hungarian folk song about being in love with someone, but it never seems to work out because of fate or some shit.
Yeah.
And it does have some wispy flute in it.
This might be the whitest thing you have ever said.
It really is. Like, I was just like, yeah, like, it. I will admit it. It's a very white person thing.
Yes. That's okay. You should embrace your non-cultured roots. Hey guys, welcome back to Sass vs. Evil Dead, the podcast about movies so bad they're good. Although, not really this week. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Brittany.
This week we are talking about a movie that, in my opinion, is a really good movie, but is a black comedy and not a horror film. We are diving into 2019's Midsommar, directed by Ari Aster. So, Brittany, I know that you had seen this movie before we decided to watch it for this week, because I remember you texting me after you had seen it, and I'm pretty sure you were just like, there's a bear suit!
So yeah, I saw this movie in theaters with a friend actually here in Memphis, and it hit differently then. I was going through like a rough breakup, so in my mind, I was like, yeah, I'm gonna burn that fucking bear! So it hit differently then, but I watched it again for this podcast, and, like, my God. Like, it's a fucking comedy.
Yeah, it's hysterical.
Yeah.
I remember I have seen it once before we watched it for the pod, and I've listened to, like, countless episodes of podcasts about, like, the director's cut, so I feel like I've seen it a bunch of times. But I just remember the first time that I watched it at home because I couldn't find anyone who wanted to go see it with me in the theater. And I was just, like, looking around my living room, like, is anyone else watching the same movie I am? Like, this is hilarious. Like, what am I watching? So when we decided to do this, I instantly knew. I was like, I want to do Midsommar. I have to do Midsommar. I need to talk about it. All right, let's get into it. So we begin this movie in, like, winter, terrible winter.
I mean, I love winter, though. I was just like, oh, it's so beautiful.
Me too,
look at all that snow.
Yeah, for sure. We get some really gorgeous shots of the winter landscape before we're kind of abruptly transplanted to somewhere suburbia where it is also still wintertime. But we hear, like, the sudden sound of, like, a ringing landline. And this is a handful of jump scares that actually, like, scared me in the movie. Did this get you when you saw it?
The first time I watched it, yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty fast, like,
but
jump
cut. I was mainly like, where did the winter wonderland go?
Yeah, take me back to Scandinavia.
Yeah. Also, I'm not sure if it happens before or after our, like, winter sequence, mm-hmm. but, like, the beginning artwork.
Oh, yes.
Like,
the 3-year-old paintings. No.
Yeah. Well, it's just, like, all the artwork in this film is very heavy-handed foreshadowing.
It is. Obviously, all the pictures show, like, what's going to happen.
Right.
There's a lot of picture shadowing in this movie. So back to suburbia, we soon learn that our main character, Danny, is worried about her sister, and she's kind of calling her parents late at night, trying to get an update about what's going on. We don't really know what's going on yet, but we'll get to that in just a second. It turns out that Danny's sister has bipolar disorder, and she is apparently in the habit of sending Danny some, like, disturbing emails or messages on a regular basis. And Danny doesn't really have super great boundaries with her sister, so we get the impression that she kind of does this call and check-in routine on a fairly regular basis. Nobody answers the phone at Danny's parents' house, and we get some kind of shots to show that, like, her parents are asleep in their bed, as we're led to believe.
Yeah, we assume.
We assume so. So nobody's answering, and so she naturally is a little bit freaked out, and so she calls her boyfriend Christian, one, to get some support, and two, to, like, check in and see if they still have plans to hang out later in the night. Which is a totally, completely normal thing to do. But Christian is, like, out with friends, and he tries to brush her off and make some comments that are, like, not super helpful to his girlfriend, who is so clearly upset.
Oh, my God. He, like, there is one line, because he's telling her, like, theoretically some things that are decent. Like, you need to give more boundaries.
Right.
And, He at one point he's like, she's like, well, I don't do this. And he says, you do though, babes. Like,
babes.
It's so fucking brotastic. It makes me want to vomit in my mouth.
This is like the first hint that we have that he's going to be a complete fucking asshole. He's not totally an asshole here. He's kind of like you said, he's like saying some of the right stuff, but the way it comes off is like she's bothering him, or like mm-hmm. she shouldn't be doing this when, like, this is the person that you're in an intimate relationship with. Who the fuck else are you supposed to call when something like this happens? So, I didn't like his whole attitude, and his friends also fucking suck in this scene.
I haven't seen the extended cut of this movie.
Me either.
I want to, but I hear that, like, you get a sense of how much of an asshole he is from that.
Yeah.
More so.
And Danny's sort of, she's on the phone and she's doing that thing where you're like obviously crying and upset, but you don't want anyone to know that you're crying. But like also you kind of do want them to know, or you just wouldn't have called anyone. And I just have to say now, we've known Danny's character in like 5 minutes of this movie, and I already just feel so fucking bad for her. Frances Pugh's acting in this movie is just, it's so fucking good.
So good. Just, like, her expressions are phenomenal. And, like, I noticed in the second viewing of this, there's, like, a close-up mm-hmm. of her here that's very reminiscent to the close-up at the end.
It sort of mirrors that.
Yeah. That was a little detail I caught on that second viewing.
Yeah. So immediately after Christian and Danny hang up, we get a conversation with Christian's fucking asshole friends that basically lets us know that Christian really wants out of his relationship with Danny, but he's not quite sure how to pull the plug, especially with all this kind of drama going on in her family. And again, at this point, he's not like a total asshole. Like, you see that he's kind of wrestling with, you know, I really don't want to be with this person anymore, but I also don't want to, like, unnecessarily hurt her, which actually turns out to be the worst possible choice. And sometimes being direct and saying, look, I can't be what you need is actually the kinder thing. And he just ends up dragging her for so long.
Yep. But I will say we definitely get clues that he's an asshole from his friends, because the friend who sort of looks like one of the dudes from New Girl.
Yeah.
has a line, because they're talking about going to Sweden, and mm-hmm. he's like, don't forget the Swedish milkmaids.
Oh my God, his friends suck. They're fucking horrible.
I hate them.
They're worse
so
than
much.
Him somehow.
Yeah.
So Danny then calls her a friend of hers, and she kind of reveals that, like, she has a brain cell, and so she's obviously aware that Christian is working up to breaking up with her. And her friend is a good friend, and she's basically just like, dude, ditch that bitch and make the switch. Like, get rid of this fucking dead weight. Which maybe she would have had she not then been notified that her sister has completed suicide, and she has killed her parents also in one fell swoop.
This part was like the real terror of the movie for me. Like, as someone who has lost people to suicide and like struggled with my own shit, like that is like a true terrifying scene.
Yeah. I would argue that the first 12 minutes of this movie is an extremely effective short horror film, and the rest of the movie's a comedy.
And like, you start to get hints of the comedy even during this, because, like, the look on Christian's face as he's going up to the apartment after he gets the call from Danny is just like, oh, shit.
He's like, now I'm never gonna be able to break up with her.
Well, I mean, it's just like, oh, man, like, life is decided for me. Like, that's why you shouldn't have been direct, dude.
Yep, I should have left. So we get a genuinely, like, terrifying shot. And again, the beginning of this movie is really, really scary and really effective. But we get a really terrifying shot of her sister's basically like death by homemade gas mask, which is, oh my God, it's so scary. It's so terrible.
Like the makeup that they did on the actress with like the veins. It was
terrifying. And then we get like an uncomfortably long scene of Danny, who's like wailing. I mean, she's obviously so upset. How could you not be? And Christian is there, and he's kind of like, he's trying to kind of hold her while she's like slumped over his lap, but she's like writhing, you know, like she's grieving very loudly, and he's just like doing his best to just like sit there. Like, I mean, what could you do honestly in this other than what he's doing?
I mean, it's very reminiscent of in like Hereditary when the mom is just like screaming on the floor. And it's such raw grief and pain.
Yeah. Ari Aster does that really well too, where like, I think he's really capturing that, and it makes it difficult to look away. And then the camera lingers like 30 seconds too long for it to be comfortable. And it's just so, and that in the score that's overlaid, especially over this shot, it just makes it so unsettling, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get the opening credits and the title card, and we flash forward to like 6-ish months later. And then again, to me, this is kind of where the horror movie ends, basically. Everything that we get before the title card is like a super effective, scary, well-shot, and incredibly acted horror film. And then the rest is like an Oscar-worthy black comedy and family drama, and I will fight anyone.
Oh, I 100% agree. Like,
oh, good. That will make this easy.
I mean, like I said, like, it hit me different the first time I watched it, just because I think of the place I was in life. But like, when I was watching it the second time, I was like, my God, like, who thinks this is like a scary movie?
Well, not people in Sweden, because they test audience like screened it there and they laughed hysterically. So I'm so glad that I'm not alone.
The Swedes get it.
They were like, this is a parody of our traditions. And I agree, Swedes.
Oh, it is. I agree. For sure.
Totally. So it might be 6 months later at this point, but Danny is obviously still grappling with the death of her family. Meanwhile, Christian is just concerned with getting the fuck out of his relationship for like 45-minute increments whenever possible. And he lets Danny know that he's headed to a party. And she's kind of like laying in bed. She's not asleep, but she's just kind of resting in a room by herself.
Yeah. Also, there is a big old bear picture above the bed. Like, hello, fucking foreshadowing.
It's bear shadowing.
Bear shadowing. Yeah. And again, like, it's a little heavy-handed for me. Like, especially because I'd seen like Wicker Man before, and I was just like, I know where this is going.
Yeah. I had not until last week when we reviewed it. But yes, looking back, it's like, oh, God, here we go.
Right.
And it's also like not good art. It's just like painted by a 3-year-old.
No, like the one above her bed looks like she got it at like fucking Pier 1 Imports.
They absolutely bought it there. The props department walked in and was like, you got anything with bears? It's Scandinavian looking.
Oh, sweet, it has a princess kissing the bear's nose. This will work perfectly.
Exactly. Just what the doctor ordered. So, instead of kind of staying at home in her catatonic state like Christian basically suggests she does, Dani decides that she's going to join him at this party. And it's here that she learns that Christian is about to embark on an international trip and hasn't said a word to her. This motherfucker has a ticket to another continent. He's been planning it, like, literally since before her family croaked and has just said exactly nothing.
I love the looks on the friends' faces
yeah.
in this scene. And I also like the technique that, like, they film from behind when people are lying in this film. Like, it happens a lot with Christian, but it also happens some with, like, the cult members.
Uh-huh.
But like, so you just see the faces of the friends who are just like, oh shit. Like, what are we with? Like, we're witnessing this fucking disaster right now.
Yeah, this was the first time in the movie when I was just like, okay, fuck this dude. Like, hardcore, not a Christian fan from this point forward. Every other thing I could have excused because I think he had the best intentions. But with this, he was just, he was gonna fucking leave and just be like, well, call you later and say nothing.
Yeah, or just, like, hope that she, like, gets angry and breaks up with him or something. Some sort of manipulative bullshit.
Yeah. So Dani and Christian naturally have a fight about this trip in which Christian literally, she confronts him about it, and he literally goes, I'm sorry? Like, as a question, when he is well aware of the fact that he has completely fucked up.
And it, oh, God, the gaslighting.
God, oh, this is painful. Okay, so it's genuinely so hard to watch Dani beg his ass to have a functional fucking relationship and then walk on eggshells around him. Again, it's amazing acting because she's just like, she flips it as though, like, she has done the wrong thing when he's the one who is clearly fucked up here.
Well, yeah, because, like, he's manipulating her the whole time. He's like, well, I did tell you about it. Like, I said I might go, but...
Oh, God. He's terrible.
I just decided today. That's fucking believable.
He's fucking terrible.
God damn it.
So naturally...
Men are terrible.
Yes, they are. So naturally, Christian invites Dani to come on the trip to Sweden as like a last-ditch effort, but tells his friends, like, don't worry, like, I only invited her, like, as an olive branch, but she definitely won't be coming. And then you cut to 30 seconds later, and guess what? She's coming!
Oh, yeah, well, it's very obvious that he's trying to lie to his friends as well, because he's just like, so I invited Dani, like, just to be nice, but she's not coming. But, I mean, she said she might come, but
she definitely said she's coming.
Yeah, it's so fucking painful to just watch his character interact with anyone. I hate him so much.
Fuck you, Christian.
Fuck him. Burn the bear.
We're not Christian stans on this podcast. And then, so creepy Swede friend Pelle does some May Queen shadowing, and he seems to realize out of nowhere that the one person he knows who has experienced trauma recently and is desperately in need of some sense of supportive community might just be the best person to join the fucking cult that he comes from. Like, obviously, why does it just dawn on him just now?
Aha! Confession, I would probably fuck the Swede. Like, I would do it.
But, like, I don't know how skinny he is. I have to go back and look.
But, like, in all fairness, I probably would have, like, fucked Rasputin. So, like, with or without the gigantic dick. So there's that. It was one of these moments where I was just like, oh, God damn it. Like,
the question is, would you join the cult?
So I would join the cult, but I would somehow, like, worm my way into the power structure.
Yeah, good answer. So Pelle kind of starts in this scene, he starts, like, grooming her to bring her into the cult. And so he just, like, randomly brings up her personal fucking tragedy, and it totally throws her off balance, and it gets her in this, like, shaky mindset, like right before they get on the plane. So she's going into this situation where she's just like wide open for some manipulation and groupthink.
Yup.
So I think it's really from mostly this point on that the film starts to get genuinely funny. So our group arrives in Sweden and it's beautiful and the sun never sleeps and they like give weird hugs and hey, let's take some shrooms, guys.
Oh, so like as soon as this happened, I was like, no, no, Danny, don't take the shrooms. It's not a good idea right now. Mayday, mayday, don't do it. Don't do it.
Well, to be fair, she doesn't take the shroom. She takes the shroom tea.
Yeah.
I've never done any sort of psychedelic drug whatsoever, but I feel like I would not take the tea form. Like, I feel like that would just taste like dirty sock water. I'd rather just, like,
it would
chew
gross.
It and drink and yeah. have it done.
I mean, I guess they could, like, put it into something that would make it taste a little bit better.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Ooh. So it's not long before they're all just tripping balls. And the grass is, like, growing into their bodies. And the trees are breathing. And
okay.
Go ahead.
So, guy who looks like he's from New Girl and has, like, crazy eyebrows.
We're going to change his name because if you Google actor with the eyebrows, he comes up. I'm not shitting you. So his
That's
name,
hilarious.
Henceforth and forevermore, is actor
right.
with the eyebrows.
So actor with the eyebrows has some of the funniest fucking lines here. He's just like, why is the sky still blue? I don't like it. I don't like it. And then a dude from the cult walks by and he's like, I don't want new people, which like is a sentiment I like it fill in my heart generally. Like
yeah.
just as a person.
Yeah. But I think like especially in that situation.
Yeah. No, I totally get it with the experience he's like currently having.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt it very much, and this is not something, you don't want to be actor with the eyebrows, but it was in this moment that I had to accept that I would be actor with the eyebrows. He was like, guys, let's lay down. He's like, seriously, lay down. And nobody's laying down. He's like, lay down! He's getting really upset that they're not laying down with him. Danny seems to be doing, like, pretty well for most of the experience until she abruptly stands up, which I feel like is the opposite thing where, like, when you're really drunk, you should never lay down. I feel like when you're tripping balls, like, don't abruptly stand up. But then we don't really know why she stands up, but she stands up and she says something like, you can't think about that. It's almost your birthday or something to that effect.
Somebody says something about family. And that's when she abruptly stands up.
She's like, nope.
It brings her back to reality, and she books it to the outhouse.
Where we have jump scare number two!
Yeah, and also, like, this part was funny to me because it's, like, common, like, it's a common thing to hear, like, if you're tripping, like, don't look in the mirror.
Oh.
You may see, like, you might have some, like, existential crisis shit that you're not prepared for.
Oh, God, or see your dead sister.
Or see your dead sister, apparently. Again, like, this was not a good idea for Danny with her mental state.
Yeah, I was really hoping because it was, again, a pretty effective jump scare. I was like, yes, this is going to be terrifying. But this is kind of like the last scary thing in the movie, I think, at least. So 6-ish hours later, Danny, like, wakes up in a field, and she's sober as a three-toed sloth, my friend. The group straps on their backpacks and heads into the wilderness so that they can get to, like, the cult compound proper. Up until this point, they're, like, on the cult's land, but they're not, like, with that many other cult members. It's just kind of people scattered here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our characters just, like, trudge right along without complaint, but actor with the eyebrows is, like, super upset about Sweden's tick problem, which, like, do they have a tick problem there?
I don't know. I didn't Google this.
I feel like ticks can't live in the Arctic Circle. Not that that's where Sweden is, but
I mean,
I feel like it's too cold for ticks.
Climate change, Allie.
Yeah, true that. Yeah, and again, I was like, yep, that'd be me. I'd be like, are there bugs here?
God, I'm probably the fucking Swede because I'm always trying to, like, get people to, like, join my bullshit.
Yeah. You're Pele, and I'm
Pele.
Actor with the eyebrows.
Yeah.
I think I got the short end of the stick. So they get to the compound, and they see just like a bunch of white people who are dressed like, well, white people. And they have some more like weird cult hugs. And there are like flute players scattered around the clearing because of course there are. And I have to give Ari Aster an A+ for his commitment to showcasing white people's lack of talent in the musical arena through bad flute music.
Okay, confession.
You're a bad flute player!
No, I dig the shit out of Eastern European folk music, and, like, not gonna lie, my top song from this past year was a sad-as-fuck Hungarian folk song about being in love with someone, but it never seems to work out because of fate or some shit.
Yeah.
And it does have some wispy flute in it.
This might be the whitest thing you have ever said.
It really is. Like, I was just like, yeah, like, it... I will admit it. It's a very white person thing.
Yes. That's okay. You should embrace your non-cultured roots.
I don't know why we like wispy flute, but we fucking do.
I love it.
It gets me pining for the fjords.
Yeah. Sorry. That's so funny. I need pining for the fjords on a bumper sticker. As someone with absolutely no Nordic ancestry whatsoever. Oh, God. So I feel like this scene is like every white person's dream and every person of color's nightmare.
Yeah, it does look a bit like a Hitler youth gathering.
Yeah, it does.
But I do like that he chose to make a horror film in daylight. And make it sun-soaked. You don't see that often. Again, it's really reminiscent of, like, The Wicker Man. Mm-hmm. Especially the original. It's so brightly colored. Especially the original, because it was the fucking 70s. So, yeah.
And I think it adds to the disorientation of the movie, too. Mm-hmm. That you're expecting a lot of things to happen at night, and they don't. It all happens brightly lit! So not a whole lot actually happens in this sequence. We meet a lot of crazy white people, and we learn that nature is a hermaphrodite.
Oh my God, so the cult leader, my favorite character.
Oh, like Granddaddy Pele? They're both named Pele, right?
No, his father, it's spelled odd. I think it might be pronounced Ood.
Father Ood, that's what we're going to call him.
Father Ood. But I love fucking Father Ood because he's wearing his little, like, smock and he's just like, it's kind of girly.
Yeah. So the next time that you guys watch this movie, try to ignore that absolutely none of the extras in the background are moving, which is odd. And we're introduced also to the world's worst finger painter, who, of course, is the prophet to the Yahoos.
Naturally.
Because who else would it be? We also get our first glimpse of the sort of ceremonial nature of the shindig with some genuinely funny, like, shouting from an outdoor stage. It feels like the world's worst community theater production, basically.
Yeah, it really does. And I also like that the leader of the ceremony is just like, what poetry it is that it's the hottest and brightest summer on record.
Like, that carbon hits different, though.
It's just like, you know, crazy white people ignoring climate change in their commune.
Yeah, just like... Yeah! We'll get to that in just a second.
Hoo-ha!
Oh, God. We should have prepared for this by, like, just taking weird breaths while on shrooms.
Yep.
They're all on shrooms, I'm pretty sure. They have to be. And it's at this point that my notes just start saying, dude, white people are insane. Like, every fourth note just says that white people are crazy. So our characters then get taken to the guest house, which is super fucking cool, and are literally told that the old people are killed in their weird cult life cycle worldview. And they just like, meh. Like, Pele straight up, they ask, like, what happens when you're old? He's like, they get their throats cut gesture. And they're just like, cool, cool. And just like move on like he never fucking said that.
Right. I guess they're like, oh, he's joking.
Yeah. And then we go back outside and we see some cult members who are like singing and what cannot legally be defined as dancing, but they think they're dancing. And they're like holding hands and like running through the clearing, literally just like, hee-yah! Because they can't sing or dance. So like, that's the best that they can do.
I mean... I have no defense for that. We got like some folk dances, and I guess we have ballet. But I've been forced to go to enough fucking Irish festivals by my family to know that clogging is fucking stupid. Like, yeah, we gave you Swan Lake, but we also fucking gave you Lord of the Dance. So I just have to apologize for that. Like, I'm sorry for dude. Prancing around on stage like a goddamn show pony.
You guys have no idea how funny it is to watch very redheaded Brittany just genuinely apologize for the scourge of white people. So I think that scene is supposed to be ominous or like unsettling, but it's just funny. Like, there's nothing there makes me scared whatsoever. So Pele gives Danny a pretty decent drawing of herself for her birthday, and we learn that Christian, the world's worst fucking boyfriend, forgot her birthday because, according to Danny, she forgot to remind him.
Oh, God. Like, we also get a pathetic scene with Christian later. It's the most pathetic in the entire movie, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Where Pele hands him a slice of cake, and he takes Danny outside, is sadly singing happy birthday to her,
yeah,
whilst desperately attempting to light the candle and failing each time. And Danny is just like, give up, dude. And it was just a visual reminder for me of every time I've been given flowers as an empty romantic gesture.
Mm-hmm. Men, just stop trying.
Well, it's just like, the dudes are like, bitches like roses, right? Despite the fact that I've been like, you know, like, I really don't like flowers. Maybe, like, you know, get me like a book or something I'm interested in.
Yeah. Pay attention to me as a human and not like a walking vagina.
Exactly.
Yeah. What a novel idea. Oh my God. Just fucking throw me off the sacrificial rock at this point. I've had enough.
Right? Take me.
Yeah. We'll get there. But now we cut back to another shitty dude to learn that Connie, who is one of the British tourists who came to the celebration with another cult member who also, like Pele, went out to, like, do his thing for a while before he came back. And that person's name is Ingmar. So we learn at this point that Connie has basically refused to fuck Ingmar. And, ooh, is he about to get his revenge? They don't know this yet.
Nope. But
he's like, dun, 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 you're going to be a sacrifice. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun. I'll show you. Refuse me and you get sacrificed to the cult.
Yeah. So there's some really good bear shadowing in which there's an actual exchange where the actual lines are, so are we just going to ignore the bear then, who's like in a cage and they walk past it? And Ingmar answers, it's a bear, as though that's an actual answer.
Yeah, it's just like, it's a bear.
The fact of the bear is not arguable, I guess.
Again, heavy bear shadowing.
They're getting you with the bear here. So we walk by a really cool tapestry featuring a vagina that I think is like in desperate need of some monistat or like a broad spectrum antibiotic or something.
An antifungal.
Yeah. Or this person just has some like Olympic skill level vaginal bleeding that they can do, because the level of accuracy that it would take, at least for me, to plop period blood into a small cup from like a 3-foot distance is admirable. I feel like that takes something that I don't have in me.
That's not a skill you've developed over your life.
Nope, nope, I'm not going to start trying now. So anyway, that night our little group is getting ready for bed and Pele lets them know that they get to witness a pretty important ritual the next day. He tells them what the Swedish word is for it, but the only person who knows that such a thing exists is the one of, I think, like 1.5 black people in this movie. And he's not letting anyone into the club. Like, he does not want them to know. I think
also, I like that Christian gets his phone out and he's just like, oh no, I can't Google.
Well, this little redheaded sack of shit just gets like super weirdly pissed that nobody will tell him what's going to happen. And then, yeah, he gets his phone out and he's just like disproportionately mad about it. It's like, dude, calm down. He's just mad that, like, his friend is smarter than him, and they're clearly in the same grad school program, and the other friend is, like, outshining him. And so he's like, nobody will fucking tell me. I'm gonna fucking Google it, assholes. And then, like, of course there's no Google on this compound. The scene, it really could have played as, like, super ominous and, like, people are gonna die. But instead, we hear actor with the eyebrows in the background asking for someone to come and check him for ticks before they go to bed because this movie is a comedy. Like, why did they put that in there if you're not supposed to laugh?
Like, also, at one point, I think this had happened, before they go to bed, one of the people from the cult comes in and is like, the children are watching Austin Powers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I'm like, on what TV, first of all?
Right. Like, we're still holding to the out of stupa, but we really need to see Mike Myers. Yeah.
Oh, geez. So we cut to the next sunny day, and our group is out having a meal before, like, the breakdown drops. That's what it felt like. Their tables are set up, like, in a, like, a rune pattern, I think.
Yeah, it's actually the rune Othilla, which is tied to family, and I don't know if that's, like, intentional. It might be, because there are a lot of runes placed in this movie, but some of them are just bullshit, yeah, it could go either way.
So maybe it means something and maybe it doesn't.
Yeah.
And everyone is, like, standing there. Nobody sits down until two older individuals who are, like, dressed in blue, kind of, I think you're supposed to get the sense that it's, like, ceremonial dress. They come and they sit at the table. So once they sit down, everybody else is kind of able to sit down.
I felt like the old lady looked like an older Danny.
Maybe. And to me, she didn't look nearly as old as the guy. Like, they're supposed to be the same. They're supposed to be 72, right?
Yeah, she was looking really good for a 72-year-old.
Yeah, she had some skincare. She got some sunscreen out on the compound.
They have a very strict skincare regimen at this cult.
Yeah, I guess so. We don't know it yet, but these are the two who are about to have their swan song, baby. We also have a really cool shot of the, like, sacrificial lambs who are walking up to the table. And then there's a yellow A-frame house in the background. And I have in my notes that the 3/4 of me that is white fucking loves an A-frame house so much. I can get down with some A-frame.
An A-frame house in the woods.
Just flute music playing from...
flute music playing from the woods from somewhere.
God knows, yeah.
The fawns.
Yeah. So everyone eats, and then the two older people stand up, and they start singing a weird-ass fucking song, which, again, is supposed to be played as creepy, but it's just downright funny.
Yep.
It's at this point that my notes start saying shit like, is there any version of reality in which this movie is not read as hilarious? Like, does anyone watch this scene and they're like, yeah, I'm real scared. Like, I feel a sense of dread.
this is terrifying, when they went woo-ha for the, like, fifth time already.
It felt like the kangaroo throat singing from Body Melt.
It really did, yeah.
No shade at all to, like, actual, like, in a pack, like, throat singing, but white people shouldn't do it.
No.
After some of that real bad singing, it's time to get this show on the road, and our two old people's chairs are, like, instantly transformed into litters, and then off they go, carried away by the other cult members. And side note, these chairs absolutely did not come from IKEA, or they would have just, like, snapped in half as soon as they, like, folded those fucking legs out. This is some craftsman-level quality in this cult. So our group proceeds to stand en masse under a big, like, cliff, like an overhang, and they still have not put together what is about to happen.
I like that there's this moment where you, like, break the fourth wall because there's, like, a kid who turns back and looks at the audience.
Yeah.
And is like, y'all know what's about to happen.
Yeah, because we are smart, but everyone else in this movie basically shares exactly one fucking brain cell. They're just like, oh, I don't know what could happen now. Just watching them. How do you not understand what is about to occur here is, like, the only possible explanation is that it's a comedy where we're supposed to think that they're stupid and laugh at all their reactions. But other than that, I just don't get, like, are we supposed to believe that they really don't have any understanding at this point, that they're just like, da 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 da.
Da da da. Yeah. This is normal. Like, oh, there's those old people are on the cliff. Like, what could possibly go wrong?
After we were told less than 24 hours ago that old people die. Old people were killed.
They were just joking, Hallie.
Yeah, right.
Well, people really don't do that.
The one black guy in this movie actually does know what's about to happen, and he's, like, remarkably calm just standing there.
Very calm.
We get some hammer shadowing, and then the old white lady goes up to, like, the edge of the cliff and does some weird yoga.
It is, it's like she's like, tried to do, like, Tai Chi before she dies.
Yeah, like, this is that's your last act? Okay. Mm-hmm. And then she, of course, falls to her death. And, like, right before she falls off, Danny figures out what's going to happen. And she, like, reaches over for Christian kind of at the last minute, like, holy shit, like, this is about to go down. But other than that, they're just like, huh, that's weird yoga. Just, like, watching the performance, basically. But, so the lady jumps off, and she really sticks the landing here. She just,
she
bam, like, splatter. Face first. Yes.
Like a goddamn watermelon.
Yes, exactly. So, naturally, her head fucking explodes, because Ari Aster is, like, hard for headshots in his movies, basically.
Yes, he is.
Our tourists, like, they sort of start to flip shit a little bit. The British tourists more so than the American tourists.
Yeah, and I love that they, like, they show the British tourists, like, freaking out.
Yeah.
And then there's this old woman who's just like, I don't know what's the problem? Didn't they know?
Yeah, and they're like, oh, so, like, we see a shot of our American tourists who are obviously unsettled, but they're, like, still watching the old man come up and do his weird yoga. But the British tourists are like, somebody try to stop him. You know, like, they're yelling and blah, blah, blah. It's not enough to save the old man. So he takes his last leap there. But unfortunately, he's a fucking idiot. And he decides to take his death plunge feet first. And that does not quite work out, I think, as he planned. Obviously not. Everything that people do, women do better. Just evidence here.
Even jumping off cliffs to your death.
Yeah, to sacrifice yourself. So the old guy ends up obviously seriously injured, but alive. But don't worry, listeners. Remember that hammer? Some cult members decide that it's time to play Smash the Watermelon, and they finish off the old dude pretty quick. Although he's, like, very, very dead after the first swingily-do, we do have to suffer through a few more people taking their shot. Because apparently, this is the only way that Ari Aster gets off. I'm convinced.
or maybe it's supposed to make it more ritualistic because it's, like, three people total.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, an elder and then, like, a young, like, young woman and a young dude. So I don't know if it's, like, you know, three is an important number. Like,
right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. So the special effects here are not great, and it really took me out of the movie. Like, we saw enough the first time, and I think we should have just moved on, because the makeup is just not that great. It doesn't look as realistic to me. It literally looks like a watermelon that they put some teeth in, and they're, like, smashing it. So then it's time to move on. And the British folks are literally like, fuck this, I'm out. And one of the cult members is like, don't be mad, we love dying here. I can't wait to explode my own gourd one day. Like, it's trying to make it make sense to them.
Which... I don't know, like, my nihilistic ass was like, uh-huh, I get it.
Same, let it end.
just end it now.
Yeah. But of course, this does not work for the British tourists. That's not going to placate anybody. And alas, it doesn't really matter because the mission has been accomplished anyway, and it's just time to get on with the rest of the show and the rituals. There's not really much more to be done here. And this is where we are going to leave it for part one of Midsummer.
I can't wait till next week because it just gets crazier.
It gets crazy. What a fucking movie. It literally gets more bonkers from here. So next week we are going to talk about pube-infested pastries, group mourning, and getting sewn into bear carcasses.
Yep.
And if you don't think that all of that sounds fucking hilarious, then you're listening to the wrong podcast.
Yup.
Any final thoughts for part one?
Nah. I'm done with this week.
Yeah. All right, guys. That will be it for us for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Sass vs. Evil Dead. And we will see you next week for part two of Midsummer. Stay spooky, my friends. Bye.
Bye.
Also high on shrooms. No. Maybe we should have been. That would be crazy as hell.
Oh, like we should do the podcast. That would be an interesting experience.
Yeah, we should have recorded while having some psilocybin.